Spot. Driving. No purchase necessary.
The following is a live show streaming from two radio show producers / sports fans. Ray Atkinson and Josh Hall have one mission: to gain your attention. This is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
Well, you want to talk about a close shave there.
Close shave. Ray, I didn't even shave at all today. What are you talking about?
Well, not really that you shaved and everything like that. I mean, are you still celebrating Movember?
No shave November? No, I'm not. I'm just lazy when it comes to shaving. I'm no Ryan Gosling or anything. I don't keep up on my looks, as you can tell.
All right, well, no one would ever confuse you with a Ryan Gosling, ever.
Not yet.
Not ever. You're what, 30 years old? You've reached your full potential.
I'm 29, okay?
Okay, well, you're almost 30.
I'm 29 and a half, Ray.
You're almost 30. If you're not Ryan Gosling at this point, you never will be.
And I refuse to be 30 years old, okay?
All right,
well, I'm going to find a time machine.
You're 29, and you're getting close.
I'm getting close.
See, I'm 27, okay?
And yeah, I know. You got time. You're
I
in
still
your
got
prime.
Some time. I still got some time.
And hair.
I got lots of hair.
Yeah.
And I'm probably going to keep it for the rest of my life.
Count your blessings.
Because baldness is not something that runs in my family.
Yeah, until now, maybe. Who knows?
No, it's not going to skip a generation, okay? A lot of things has skipped a generation for me, okay?
Like the Colts in Baltimore?
Like the Colts in Baltimore, yes. They skipped town as well. But
winning baseball for 14 years in Baltimore?
Bowling. My dad is in the Maryland State Hall of Fame for bowling. He's bowled 36 perfect games.
Really?
Yes, and I could not inherit a dime of that talent. I mean, I was over there the other day. He had a 9 handicap, and he said, "That sucks."
Well, you and I have something in common, and actually, Ray, both of our fathers are in the Maryland State Hall of Fame.
Okay, what was your father in the Hall of Fame for?
Boxing.
Ah, of course, I figured that.
Something I never wanted to get into.
Never wanted
But I respect as an art form.
Never wanted to get into boxing, not even as a form of exercise or anything like that?
No, definitely exercise. It's great exercise.
Well, I get that, but is it also maybe, you can use it as exercise, use it as a motivational tool for yourself? I don't know. You don't have to box for a living to study boxing. If you just want to just train all the time, that's good for you.
It's great for self-defense too. I mean, when you even if you see a fight in real life, usually sometimes, most times, if not, those fights are just horrible. It's just people pulling on shirts and bad headlocks and everything. I'm like, do you guys have any technique at all?
It's like they put their hands over their face and they're blindly swinging.
Exactly. Or just terrible headlocks and hair pulling, and it's just awful. Learn some technique.
Well, technique was kind of out the door in this Ravens and Jaguars game. That's what I was going with the close shave there, Josh.
Yeah, I mean,
I almost had to change the intro.
Yeah, you look at the speaking of intro, thank goodness we didn't have to play the Brown Note music for this week.
Yeah, I'm not even going to entertain the listeners into what that music would have sounded like, okay? Maybe we'll make another fun exotic bet come next week. Hey, maybe the Texans are rolling for the Ravens. Ryan Fitzpatrick is out for the year. They're down to, John Savage is his name?
Yeah, I think he's the long-lost brother of Fred Savage, who used to play on the Wonder Years. Oh, wait, never mind now. That totally unrelated there.
Mole. I know Fred Savage also has the mole in which Austin Powers was it? Was it Goldmember or was it the spy?
It was Gold. It was Goldmember.
It was Goldmember, not the spy who shagged
the
me.
The one with Beyonce as the
Foxy Cleopatra.
Foxy Cleopatra, yeah.
Because she's a whole lot of woman.
Yeah. Fat Bastard was in the movie too, but he was a sumo wrestler, so he was kind of an athlete in a sense.
I just can't get that image out of my head of him in the fat suit, and he's all like a hairy ginger.
Just think of
him
as
he's Wolf Ginger.
Just think of them as fat suits, Ray. Don't even think of them as real people.
I'm trying not to think of them as real people, but at the same time, the suit just looks so realistic to where he just looked like a hippo ginger, greasy guy.
Well, at least it's nothing compared to what Yokozuna was back in the 90s. I mean, there was no fat suit there, man.
He was, 700 pounds rolling at
and
one
he
point?
Was a, he was a Samoan pretending to be a Japanese sumo wrestler.
Yeah,
he And pulled it off, though.
And come from a very respectable wrestling family. And
a long list of people in that family.
That are still in professional wrestling as well.
Or Hollywood, depending on who you're talking about.
Yeah, especially who I'm talking about. Yeah, Yokozuna, he was running at 700 pounds, though, right before he died, right?
Quick on his feet, too.
Very quick on his feet for a 700-pound man. And I was just thinking to myself, man, you do not want to get bonsai. If he botches that bonsai drop and actually drops onto you, you are going to have two collapsed lungs.
Speaking of bonsai.
And a couple of broken ribs.
Speaking of bonsai dropping and a guy who probably should have had some broken ribs, man, I did not want to be Blake Bortles this week.
No, he was sacked, what, 8 times?
8 times for 63 yards lost. And his QBR was 10.4. His rating overall was 61.8. But by the way, can we just please have it narrowed down to one rating? Just one rating. I don't need a QBR or a rating. Just give me one rating to determine a quarterback. Is he an A-plus or an E-plus? Actually, there's no such thing as an E-plus.
There are no
E-pluses.
That
would E-pluses. Be like an E-plus would sound a lot better. E-minus.
It'd be like, you're failing, but there's potential.
a D-plus. What didn't Bart Simpson get excited for a D plus one time because that meant he
passed and was able to move on to the next grade?
Yeah,
which he never really did.
It's like if you get a C in college, you don't even get a credit at all. I mean, yeah, technically you pass, but you didn't.
No, C, you get a credit.
Yeah, but it has to be a C plus, right?
No, it's a C. You C, you get a credit. And let me see.
D definitely not.
The D is passing, but that credit you can't transfer that credit.
Nope,
is what it is.
Not at all. Nope.
But you still get credit for the class and you pass.
So what grade would you give Bortles?
Blake Bortles.
I give his offensive line an F minus.
I'd give his offensive line an F. I mean, come on, they didn't. Well, in terms of the running game, they weren't too bad. But when you get sacked, let's see here, it was a pretty bad beating that he got. 8 sacks on Blake Bortles, and they even had a block punt in this game. But we're still teasing the show here, Josh. You're trying to get more into analysis here. So what are we talking about today? We're talking about Ravens versus Jaguars and how they barely squeak by at 20-12. Hey, good year, 2012.
But by the way, we have to intro the show once again because this is how we started the past couple of weeks. We've had interesting conversation between you and I, sometimes insider stuff that only few people would know about. So for strangers that are now just tuning into the show, what is the name of this show, Ray?
Well, they're looking at it right there on their audio boom or on sfmsports.net, but it is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All.
On Facebook, where can you find us?
The Baltimore Sports Free-for-All podcast.
And where can you find us on the Twitter?
That would be at B Sports, the number, at B Sports Free, the number 4-all.
And on sfmsports.net, of course, and my blog, which is
Monday Sports Mornings with Josh,
which you can find on Blogger. And we're getting near the end of the NFL season, more NFL predictions, Orioles talk, if there is any Orioles talk leading up. Of course, me and Ray will be talking about that. And just a lot more sports talk, really.
Maryland basketball. And,
oh, definitely Maryland basketball. We have to include that on the show.
And, of course, for those who are just now tuning in or just tuned in last week and didn't hear it, where our two-minute rants are coming back, where we just find something that, you know, we're either angry about, happy about, or we just want to bring a little bit of attention to for 2 minutes, and we just talk about it for 2 minutes straight of just us with a nice little bit of music in the background.
My 2 minute rant is going to be related to an illness that is coming back into professional sports that really has no business being in the sport in the first place.
Mine's going to be about a quote unquote top 10 defense.
Oh, here we go. Nice.
Yeah, so Ravens play the Jaguars this past Sunday. The score was 20-12.
Which was way off of our 28-13, or was it a 27-13 prediction we had?
Yeah, and yes. I was only giving that prediction because I was going along with everybody else. I thought this was going to be, there was a little part in the back of my head that said this was going to be a trap game.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking to myself, okay, the Ravens can't play down to their opponent too much because the Jaguars, I mean, they've lost not by much this whole season, but because they have the record that they do, it's definitely made them kind of a respectable opponent, but then kind of not in terms of where they are at as a professional football team and a rookie quarterback. I mean, the Jaguars are 2-12 right now after the loss to the Ravens. Ravens moved to 9-5.
Their first winning record since 2012.
That's not saying a lot.
I know that's not saying a lot.
I mean, it wasn't a losing record in 2013, but yeah, in 2012, that was their last winning record. Oh, the last time they had a winning record, they won the Super Bowl. How about we go there?
Well, the last winning record, the last couple of winning records they've had, they won the 3 AFC Championship games. Which, well, maybe two, maybe one of them could have ended up in a Super Bowl, but didn't.
And
but.
San Francisco 49ers, the last time, the last three times they've had a winning record, they went to the NFC Championship, and Jim Harbaugh may be out the door at the end of this year.
And not Colin,
go figure.
And not Colin Kaepernick,
or as you like to call him, Crappernick.
He is playing like Crapper Nick right now.
Yeah, he's playing terribly right now, but
looking
not
like an average quarterback.
But not as bad as what Blake Bortles had to deal with on Sunday against the Ravens front seven.
I was starting to feel bad for him too.
Okay, would you argue that this is one of the greatest front sevens the Ravens have had in terms of sack numbers, in terms of pressure on the quarterback they're generating?
Well, I would be contradicting myself, because wasn't it me who said on this show a couple weeks ago after the Ravens' terrible home loss to the Chargers that what is it that I said, that this is the worst defense that the Ravens had since they came into Baltimore in 1996?
And what was I telling to you? I'm like, even worse than when they had Walker. Oh, I forget the guy's
Frank
name.
Walker.
Frank Walker. Yeah. And you had you had Frank Walker, Ladarius Webb's rookie year.
Okay.
Couldn't have been as bad as that.
All right. I'm going to give a mea culpa here and say that maybe I ate my words a little too soon with that statement. Because, yeah, the front seven – maybe not so much the secondary, but yeah, the front seven in the last couple of games. And I don't want to say that he was a problem in the first several games of the season, Ray, but you know that ever since Haloti Ngata has been suspended, the Ravens' defensive line has played a little bit better? I don't want to start controversy. I'm just saying here, because, you know, Timmy Jernigan has been outstanding on a defensive line, just basically just tearing up offensive linemen apart and getting to the quarterback. Two sacks, two of the eight sacks that were on Bortles in this game. Timmy Jernigan, the rookie defensive lineman, had those sacks.
I'm also looking at Pernell McPhee in this Jaguars game and how he was coming into the offensive line.
Sack and a half for him.
Yeah, he was coming into the offensive line just standing up. He didn't even have his handset as a guard or anything like that, or as a tackle, and he just came in just full-blown and was blowing up linemen left and right. The Jaguars linemen had no answer for any of these guys. It was all the guys who had the sacks. It was C.J. Mosley,
who had to get in because Jernigan was getting in. He's like, man, this rookie can't have two sacks. I got to at least get one. And
yeah.
One.
So Jernigan, as you mentioned.
Terrell Suggs.
Yeah, Terrell Suggs. And
two and a half.
Two and a half for Terrell Suggs. Elvis Dumervil had one.
Just to let everyone know that he was on the defense.
Just to let everyone know he was still there.
The one tackle and the one sack in the game. Hey, guys, I'm still here. I just want everyone in the crowd to acknowledge that I'm playing today. So there you go. Eight sacks by the Baltimore Ravens defense. And you look at the tackles for loss. 10 tackles for a loss. Here's an interesting stat here too, Ray. As bad as Bortles was getting pass protected in this game, there were six passes thrown against the secondary, six passes defended against Bortles and the Jaguars offense. So say what you will about the front seven playing outstanding the last 2 weeks, and say what you will about the secondary that still has a lot of a lot more questions and answers at this point.
Yeah, what's up with Asa Jackson? I mean, is he in or is he out?
He has a right knee injury. There's no report as of this podcast, but I'm sure as the week goes on, there will probably be a big update. We do know that rookie safety Terrence Brooks is out for the year with a right...
first play of the game.
Yeah, right MCL, ACL sprain. So that's... yeah, not good at all right there. Now, when you have the MCL, ACL in relation to an injury, it usually means that your season is just about over.
Well, considering that there's only a couple games left in the season and you got playoffs, it's quite to say. Mr. Terrence Brooks, nice knowing you, but we'll see you next year, hopefully.
Anthony Levine also injured.
Again, he had a concussion last week, and then this week he suffered a knee injury, so... The secondary just keeps getting more and more banged up, and it's because of that front seven these last two games is how they were able to. And also, we got to mention inaccuracy by Blake Bortles. He was missing guys that were wide open. He was missing guys that were burnt. Asa Jackson was burnt a couple times by Cecil Shorts.
And Allen Hurns.
And Allen Hurns as well. And there was a couple other plays where Bortles overthrew a wide open wide receiver who had three or four steps in man-to-man coverage. And he missed all those guys. And I'm looking at the Jacksonville drives here and everything that they did.
But before you do that, though, you know who had a better passing game than Brian Anger? And no, it wasn't Joe Flacco for the Ravens. Brian Anger, the punter for Jacksonville, had one one pass complete out of one attempt for 19 yards on a fourth down play. Let's talk about Jacksonville's special teams for a second here, because that was probably the only good thing you could take from them out of this game was they were pretty ballsy, if I had to use a, you know, for a term for a lesser word here, in completing, you know, a fourth down play like Brian Anger did to, I believe it was Todman, the fullback for Jacksonville, for 19 yards. And also a onside kick that Jacksonville recovered. Just to kind of rub it in there, they were kind of playing like a team that had nothing to lose.
No, and you look at the drives that I want to like go with here. Yeah. Jacksonville's drives: blocked punt. Obviously, we had Darian Stewart sighting there for the Baltimore Ravens. He blocks a punt. It's recovered by Kamar Aiken. They return it for a touchdown, and that allowed Baltimore to get on the board early. But would that have helped them or would that have hurt them? Because of that punt, and it was a longer drive to begin with the Jaguars that they had in the first drive, and then the second drive, they were able to get a field goal. It's because of that punt that maybe the Ravens' offense came out a little bit flat at the beginning of the game, because they only had, I think, one possession in the first quarter. And it was, a fumble by Kyle Juszczyk?
Yeah, Kyle, which was a replayable turnover, since he kind of landed on his, if I'm quoting Tom Hanks from Forrest Gump, buttocks. But, that after review, it was a turnover before he landed.
Yeah, so they had maybe 1.5 possession in the first quarter. And on Jacksonville, it was blocked punt, field goal, field goal, field goal, missed field goal, punt, field goal, punt, 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 downs, interception. And that was like one of the last drives of the game. That was Blake Bortles trying to make something happen. The Jacksonville Jaguars did not score a single offensive touchdown all game. Blake Bortles overshooting people, looking like he's doomed in the pocket. They got to a rookie quarterback, Josh. They rattled him. Eight sacks will do that to a rookie quarterback, and the Ravens did that to Blake Bortles on Sunday. And can they keep this up against another team like the Texans, where Savage is the quarterback? Because Ryan Fitzpatrick now out for the season with a broken leg. Such a shame to see that, because he was kind of having a little bit of a resurgence with the Texans, but his season is done.
Yeah.
And now that Ryan Fitzpatrick is out, the Texans, they're down to a second-string quarterback. And you have to wonder how they're going to be able to handle that against this Ravens defense and this front seven. I mean, obviously, the secondary is the weak point, is the very, very weak link in the Baltimore's defense. And if they can get to the quarterback of Houston, I'm losing all my words here, but if they can get to Houston early, that might be the same outcome here, Josh.
Yeah, it might be, but here's the thing, though, Ray. The Texans still have something to play for, just like a good amount of teams in the AFC do at this point, unless you're Miami or you're Cleveland. By the way, speaking of rookie quarterbacks having a bad week, I do not want to be Johnny Manziel right now. Just -1 fantasy point. Think about this, Ray. Even though we've never stepped on a field, our fantasy value at this point is much higher than Johnny Manziel's this year.
Yeah, Johnny Manziel.
We're at a zero. He's at a -1 right now.
Welcome to the big leagues, Johnny.
Oh, my goodness gracious.
Hopefully you're not going to be Johnny Jam Boogie there for a second. Because
he was Johnny Jam Boogie. He was in the Olivia Newton-John tights and everything. He had the headband on. He was just not himself.
And, of course, the Bengals were not hesitating and rubbing it in his face with the money signs. I was even joking. I'm like, wow, Johnny Manziel is going to be the beneficiary of a lot of unsportsmanlike conduct penalties this year if they keep doing that. I mean, Ray Maliaiuga, he got into his face with a money sign. He got penalized 15 yards after he deflected a pass right at the line of scrimmage. That was pretty much the tail of the tape for Johnny Manziel on Sunday. It was passes deflected the line of scrimmage, linemen all out of sync. Keep this in mind, though, Josh. They had, like, I think, six rookies on that offense playing against the Bengals.
Now, Maliaiuga, he was a high-profile player at USC at one point, correct?
That he was.
Yeah, so he kind of knows how to handle the pressure and everything. If I'm Johnny Manziel, I kind of give Ray Maliaiuga a call right now and say, hey, man, I'm just going through a bad time. How do I handle all this? Like, it's simple. Stop being so arrogant. But getting back to the Ravens-Texans predictions here, looking at the Ravens' offense from Week 15 when they won 20-12 over the Jacksonville Jaguars, Flacco completed over 66% of his passes, 20 for 30 for 221 yards and a touchdown, had a 99.4 rating, and didn't and played turnover free football. Was, you know, he didn't light the world on fire, but at the same time, he wasn't deficient against a inferior Jacksonville Jaguars defense and turning over the ball and costing this team a game.
As a matter of fact, the only turnover they had was the Kyle Juszczyk fumble, and even that was maybe he didn't, because right. He was reaching for the first down, and as he did, he did a butt plant, and somebody hit his hands while he was trying to do the butt plant and lost the football. Yeah, the Ravens played pretty much mistake-free football on terms of offense, but
their leading receiver, by the way, Marlon Brown, 5 catches for 66 yards. So Marlon Brown getting back into the thick of things in the passing game.
And it was kind of a repeat of the week prior against Miami, where the Ravens, their longest rushing play did not come until the fourth quarter.
I see you're getting into the running game here.
It was Joe Flacco at first, who had like a 12-yard run. That was the longest run. Then Bernard Pierce had like a 20-yard run later on to cap that off. And against the Dolphins the week prior, it was Justin Forsett who had a 40-yard run. And before that, he was averaging like, what, 2-point-something yards a carry, and bumped it up to like 4.
And this game, he averaged 3 yards even per carry. His longest run was 6. Bernard Pierce was actually decent in this game running the ball, had 6.2 yards per carry, all 37 yards. 28 yards was his longest run. You know who had a longer run than Forsett? Take a guess. Joseph Vincent Flack.
I just said that.
Yeah. 10 yards on a running play on third down, which helped the Ravens win the game eventually. So in order
that it did, because it allowed them to run the clock out when the Jaguars were running out of timeouts.
And the Ravens, in order for them to beat the Texans, the running game definitely has to improve from the last 2 weeks. Now, I know 93 yards seems like a little bit much in the NFL, but in today's NFL, it's not. Especially when you're competing.
That's
against
combined rushing
yards.
Yeah,
combined rushing yards. Yeah.
When you have Bernard Pierce, you have Justin Forsett and Joe Flacco all contributing to the yardage.
But what I was getting to though, Ray, is that you're going to be going up against a good running attack for the Houston Texans. And that rushing attack can average over 120 yards a game.
Yeah, Arian Foster by himself had more rushing yards.
So you got to play tit for tat on that one.
He had more rushing yards against the Colts than the entire Ravens team had against the Jaguars.
And special teams, Ray, and we have to get to this because this was probably the worst game I've seen Justin Tucker play since probably Week 16 when the Ravens hosted the Patriots at M&T Bank Stadium, and he just was not on point.
But keep in mind, though, all of his misses came 54 yards or more.
Yeah, one of them almost went in, but the post, of course, denied
him. The goal post denied him off the post. And it really wasn't that bad of a kick. It's just and the first field goal that he missed, it was a bad snap.
It was a high snap, and it's – you know, remember when we talked several weeks ago how the long snapper would play a difference in these games, and so far up until this point, it really hasn't. Well,
now it has.
Now it's starting.
Field goals of 50 yards or more, everything has got to be perfect. That it's got to be a good snap, it's got to be a good spot, a good hold, and then the kicker's just got to be able to connect onto it. And the laces got to be out, okay? Just got to keep that in mind. The laces were in. Yeah. Justin Tucker's going to claim, laces were in. On those 2 field goals that he missed.
Yeah, Tucker has the leg. He definitely has the leg. He's proven that. But
luckily, everything's got to be perfect.
Luckily for him, he will be going to a dome, and he doesn't have to worry about wind. He doesn't have to worry about anything.
Well, he has to worry about maybe the wind from the heater or the climate control, the air conditioning.
Are you saying Buffalo Wild Wings is controlling the indoor climate for
Houston, Texas
Stadium?
It very well could have access to the Reliant Stadium's thermostat. Oh, wait, is it still called Reliant Stadium?
I believe it is called Reliant Stadium, if I can just look this up here real quick.
But Reliant Stadium is when it was first opened, I believe, in 2002. Yeah, Reliant Stadium is the big sponsor down in Houston. No, it's now
NRG Stadium.
NRG Stadium. NRG, what is PSI Net? Anyone? I've never even heard of NRG.
NRG Stadium, if I can look it up here on the Wikipedia. NRG is...
Did you just reference Wikipedia on this podcast?
Wiki, yeah.
Okay, here's the deal. When I was in English, when I took English in college, okay, if we cited Wikipedia on our paper, we would automatically get a failing grade.
I can see that. I definitely agree with that. So the reference here, I get an F for this reference.
That you do, okay? Oh, NRG Stadium, NRG
itself. Oh, that's what it's just called, NRG. NRG Stadium.
NRG.
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 It's going to host a Super Bowl LI in 2017. You know your Roman numerals. LI, is that 41, Super Bowl 41?
51.
Oh, That's right, 51. My mistake there.
Good grief. You're jumping back in the 10-year way back machine.
I missed the early 2000s. Those were great times.
I mean, I remember Super Bowl 40. Super Bowl 40 was definitely weird because that was the one. It was the Seahawks and the
Steelers.
And the Steelers. And that was a terribly officiated game. That was what gave rise to this whole passing league that we have now. Yeah, believe it or not, Energy Stadium is actually still on Reliant Parkway, though. So they can't rename the street.
Yeah. It's funny that even though Brett Favre left the Packers many years ago, Favre's Steakhouse is still up and running. So how about those how about them eggs right there? But going to this game, Ravens-Texans, Week 16 matchup on the road for the Ravens. Where do the Texans stand right now record-wise?
In terms of record, well, the Houston Texans, in terms of their record, they are 7-7.
So
an impressive 500.
They are an impressive.
But still in the hunt here, Josh.
Still in the hunt. They are in the hunt for a wild card spot at this point. Because let's face it, the Indianapolis Colts are going to be the top dog in the AFC South. And the Texans, they at times can be a very dangerous group on most Sundays, especially with that defense. Speaking of their defense, one guy we always bring up, and one guy you always have to bring up.
When MVP.
Defensive player of the year, definitely. I don't know about MVP.
I'm going with MVP.
J.J. Watt.
I mean, the guy can catch touchdowns. He's a defensive lineman who can catch a touchdown as a tight end.
Can he punt?
Maybe.
Can he throw the ball?
Wait, I think he actually did.
Did he have a passing touchdown
this
year?
I think he actually had a pass completed.
He's starting to become like the most interesting man in the world in the NFL.
Like I said, J.J. Watt is the best pound-for-pound player in the NFL, period. It's like if you ask who are the best players, it's going to be J.J. Watt. It's not a quarterback, it's J.J. Watt.
If you probably had three J.J. Watts on your fantasy team this year that played at certain positions, you probably would win yourself the fantasy championship.
Yeah. By the way, Colts clinched the AFC South with their win over the Texans on Sunday. So you're going to get a really ticked off Texans team coming in against the Ravens. And with that, it's going to be quite an interesting matchup considering that the Ravens come off of a win against the Jaguars where they looked a little flat on offense. It looked a little droll. It was actually a pretty boring game, to tell you the truth, except for the block punt at the beginning of the game. The rest of it was like, bleh.
Just field goal, the Josh Scobie show. By the way, if you had Scobie on your offense, on your fantasy team, congratulations.
Yeah, congratulations for Josh Scobie. If you had Justin Tucker, sorry.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah. Okay, predictions, Ray. Week 16, Ravens at Texans. Who do you have winning this game and why?
I'm going to go Texans.
Oh, this is dating back to several weeks ago after the bye week when we said the Texans game could be loss-ish. So why is this game going to be loss-ish for the Ravens?
Because I think that the Texans' offensive line is going to figure out, hey, this front seven's pretty good. I think that they're going to have a little bit of a lapse. They've had two fantastic weeks against offensive lines that were pretty droll in the Dolphins and the Jaguars. So now you've got the Texans rolling into town. Let's see what they do. At the same time, you've got Savage at quarterback instead of Ryan Fitzpatrick. So that's a little bit of an outlier factor, but Arian Foster is on that team. And with that, they're going to probably give him the ball more, throw more screens, and try to beat this front seven the way that they can. And ultimately, on the other side of the ball, defensive side, you may see more turnovers created with J.J. Watt. As I mentioned, that offensive line's got to play gangbusters for the Ravens. And I think they might have a little bit of a lapse here, and that's going to be the difference maker, is how much pressure is Joe Flacco going to be under, and how much duress is he going to be under? Him's going to be scrambling out of the pocket. Now, we've all seen Joe Flacco is a very good out-of-pocket passer, but how good can he be when it's constantly under pressure?
When he's out of pocket, out of duress, he's very good out of pocket passer.
Yeah, so let's see what he does against this Texans defense. I don't know. I think it's going to be a win by the Texans 20-17. It's going to barely squeak by because I'm giving them the advantage because it's home field.
Okay.
And they have something to play for. They have to really, really really crank it. Their backs are up against the wall right now.
And based how the Ravens have played at home this year, it probably would have been a 20-17 win for the Ravens if it were.
It would have been opposite if it was at home.
Yeah. I sort of agree with you on several things. I know J.J. Watt is going to play a huge factor, whether you like it or not, on the Texans defense. And I think the one thing that will damn the Ravens if they do and damn them if they don't is if they just key in on J.J. Watt all game and keep him out of, pass rushing plays. But that could doom the Ravens if they don't pass block right. I think the best case scenario for the Ravens, and I cringe when I say this, but I think you just have to block him accordingly. Let him earn the sacks if he has to, but I don't think it's going to play that much of a difference. I think that if Joe Flacco continues to keep the drives going, keeps the clock running, even though the Texans have dangerous offensive weapons on their side of the ball, I think if the Ravens just put up the plays that they need to, and Justin Tucker, I have more faith in him kicking field goals in an indoor stadium than windy Baltimore at this point. So Ravens defense, too, I think will have a decent game pass rushing. I don't know about Arian Foster running the ball against him. Who knows? Maybe if they keep him under 100 yards, they may defeat the Texans. I'm going to have my score a little bit lower than yours, actually. I'm going to say 16-13 Ravens.
Okay, so you're saying it's not going to be a big of an offensive matchup, which, by the way, I made an error earlier by saying that Tom Savage was the second-string quarterback. He's the third-string quarterback because Ryan Mallett is out for the season.
Yeah, that's right. Ryan Mallett, a former protege of Tom Brady's with the New England system several years ago.
Yeah, so he's done for the season, and as is Ryan Fitzpatrick. So you're down to your third-string quarterback, but as we've known in the NFL, just because you're down to your third-string quarterback, when you still got a good core of players around you, you can still do good. Look at Caleb Haney a couple years ago.
Oh, absolutely, with the Chicago Bears. No question about it.
So I think that, like I said, it's going to be close, and I've got to give the slight edge to the Texans because they're at home and because I just don't think this front seven can keep up the amount of pressure they've been keeping up, especially the last 2 weeks against the Dolphins and against the Jaguars.
Well, we can also say this, Ray. As of this podcast, the Ravens are in the sixth seed in the AFC playoffs as the second wild card, and as of this podcast, Ray, the Ravens are in control of their own destiny. So, Baltimore Ravens, all you have to do is win your final two games, and you're playing January football.
The final two games, you're 11-5. You are in the playoffs.
11-5, you should be in.
You should be in the playoffs at 11-5, although not always the case, as we've learned a couple of years ago when a 7-9 team went and an 11-win team did not go.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as of right now, they will be playing the Colts in the wild card round. Steelers will be playing against the Bengals in the wild card round. That would be a good matchup.
Yeah, that would be a good matchup. Hopefully it's it doesn't go to Bengals the Steelers way like it did a week ago when the Steelers just totally outclassed the Bengals on the field.
Now, believe it or not, that tie against the Panthers that the Bengals had has benefited both teams now, as the Bengals are in first place in the AFC North at 9-4-1.
That's absolutely sickening.
Against ahead of the Steelers and the Ravens at 9-5. 9-4-1 gets them in first place in the AFC North. The Panthers are now in first place in the NFC South at 5-8-1.
And not Drew Brees and the Saints or Matt Ryan and the Falcons. Yeah, just think about that for a second.
It's
Derek Anderson.
It's Derek Anderson and the Panthers.
Yeah, Derek Anderson.
Steve Smith called them schoolyard kids.
And unfortunately Cam Newton is sort of recovering.
May he have a speedy recovery from that car accident. Yeah. I mean, that was pretty ugly seeing the pictures of that.
Well, he was smiling when he got out of the car, so he's in good spirits.
I wish him a very speedy recovery. As Brandon Marshall as well, with a collapsed lung and a couple broken ribs.
Yeah.
He gets kneed in the back, and that was just an ugly injury that we saw on Brandon Marshall, even though on my fantasy team, I'm in the playoffs right now, he could be the difference maker, but at the same time, I don't really care about that too much. Brandon Marshall, you're one of the best in this game, and I hope to see you back into form next year. Recover from that collapsed lung and a couple of broken ribs. Rub some dirt on it, maybe.
Rub some dirt on it. Orioles talk, Ray. Or lack thereof.
What are we talking about again? The winter meetings came and went, and nothing happened.
Nothing happened at all. So do we just leave it at that? Let's minimize the Orioles talk for this podcast.
How many minutes are we in the show? 34?
Yeah.
We got some time to spare.
Oh my goodness. All right, look, what happened in the winter meetings? Was there any progress? Because this past week, I saw an MLB trade rumors, and this was before he was traded to the Detroit Tigers in exchange for Rick Porcello, the pitcher from the Tigers. Yoenis Cespedes was in talks with a trade for the Baltimore Orioles. But, of course, That's all it was, talks.
Just talks, as it was with Nick Markakis. All it was talks, and then eventually he signs with the Braves and everything else like that. Although, one thing that I did notice from the MLB winter meetings is Dan Duquette is still with the Orioles.
Yep, the manager, the executive of the year in Major League Baseball, who, and I kind of have to use this scenario here, or this example, because it just seems like the Orioles, and we were talking about fighting earlier, bar fights earlier.
And boxing.
You know who the Orioles are in the winter meetings and the winter talks right now? They're that person. They are that person that just talks trash all night and does nothing. They're all talk, no walk.
No, I was going with they're the guys who watch the fights, the bar fights, and do nothing. They just stand there and just look at it.
They're the
ogle
guy.
At it.
They are the guy at the prom who has some adequate features but has no makings of the prom king.
No, I wouldn't say. They won the AFC East. I mean, they won the AFC. They won the AL East.
I wouldn't want to win the AFC East.
No, they won the AL East. They won the AL East last year, Josh. You can't say that they're not prom king. That's pretty close to a prom king to me.
Yeah, you should be getting the prom date, and you're not. You're just settling for whatever at this point.
Maybe they're just waiting for the right one to come along. While everybody else is going after the right nows and the wham, bam, thank you, ma'ams. Everybody, the Orioles are waiting. They're waiting for the right one. That's what they're doing.
Like Ryan Howard, wink, wink. We've been hearing talks.
Colby Rasmus.
Oh, no.
That's also in the talks as well.
Mr. 246 hitter Colby Rasmus, his entire career.
It's not Melky Cabrera. He went to the White Sox.
Yeah, I wasn't really too hot about that either.
Yeah.
That's another guy who had PED talks, you know, before the season commenced.
Yeah, so you had it to where the winter meetings came and went. The Orioles have done nothing. This reminds me of last year. And last year, they had, a worse team going forward.
And they did. They did, actually.
They had a worse group of guys going forward. Now you have a pretty solid pitching staff. And with the winter meetings this year, you've got a little bit of an upgrade there, but you have lost the two guys, Nelson Cruz and Nick Markakis.
A great guy on offense, great guy on defense.
Andrew Miller make it three.
Yeah.
But other than the pitching staff, that's one guy they lost. Everybody else has been pretty solid, and you lose Nick Markakis and Nelson Cruz. But at the same time that everybody is talking about is the Orioles won the AL East title last year without Manny Machado, without Matt Wieters, without Chris Davis to his MVP-like numbers in 2013. So with those numbers that he didn't put up, they're expecting them to get better and return to form. Manny Machado, very good, very likely chance that he returns to form, very likely chance that he improves. Matt Wieters, very likely that he returns to form. Don't know if he puts up the numbers that he was putting up in March before he went down for the year, because he was going to have a career year if he kept that up. So don't know if that's going to happen, but Matt Wieters is going to return to somewhat form that he had, and that's still very valuable for this Orioles organization. Then you have what you got to answer for, because you lost Markakis and Cruz, so you got to find some way to fill those holes in the outfield and maybe at first base or DH.
Now, we got to talk about Ryan Howard here for a second. Like I said, this is all talks right now. Until action has taken place in the MLB trades and the winter offseason talks, that's all it is just talks right now. But let's just say in a real-world scenario that Ryan Howard is traded to the Orioles. And I'm looking at Ryan Howard's numbers from the past couple of years. In the past four seasons, let's go from 2011 to 2014. In 2011, he had 33 home runs, 116 RBIs, hit .253, was a top 10 in MVP voting. Well, since then, his numbers have kind of dwindled. He hit 14 home runs, 56 RBIs, and only 71 games played, and he hit .219. 2013, he had 11 home runs, 43 RBIs, hit .266, but only played 80 games. Last season, he played the most games since 2009 when he had 153 games. He had 23 home runs, 95 RBIs, but he hit .223 as a batting average, and he led the National League with 190 strikeouts.
Oof. Sounds very familiar, doesn't it?
It sounds like...
Well, except Nelson Cruz actually had a decent batting average, but...
Ryan Howard did win the NL Most Valuable Player Award in 2006, though. We do have to give him credit for that. And the rookie.
So Miguel Tejada won it in 2002. What's your point?
My point is he may rekindle that fire that he had from his... No, I'm joking.
No.
But here's the deal here. He will be 35 years old in 2015. And at this point of his career, he's got 334 home runs. He has a which is a respectable amount if you're a longtime major league player. But at this point in his career, I really don't want to take a chance on a guy who hasn't seen 30 home runs since 2011. I mean, I don't know how you feel about that, especially being 35 years old. That's risky. We thought Nelson Cruz was a risk picking up for $8 million, but it helped out the Orioles eventually.
Yeah, Dan Duquette has won has won Executive of the Year. And when he says that he's got a plan in place and he doesn't look like he's hitting the panic button, he doesn't have one foot out the door anymore, is that he's looking at the guys that he has internally, and all reports are suggesting that he likes what he's got in-house better than he likes what's out there at the free agent market, and it seems to be very thin for him. Daryl Alvarez, Christian Walker, two names that come up in AA and AAA. They've moved up to AAA, and this Orioles organization is high on both of those guys. They could make very viable replacements for both Cruz and Marquegas. You could have Alvarez play the outfield, and Christian Walker as a first baseman, so he could move Davis to DH.
Yeah, absolutely. Daryl Alvarez, over 300 is batting averages during his career in the minors, and has a 984 career fielding percentage, which is a few points lower than what Nick Marquegas' major league fielding percentage was. But at the same time, it's comparing apples to oranges, because we don't know what this kid is going to be like until he hits the major league field. But needless to say, though, you still have potential in your farm system. But of course, that's the key word, potential. He can potentially be good or potentially be mediocre.
Which you can say also at free agent signings. I mean, guys have pedigrees that they go with, but guys can fall by the wayside and slump completely. I mean, Sammy Sosa comes to mind.
Yeah, I mean, you could have said that about Sammy Sosa years ago. He had a pedigree. Guy was an all-star MVP candidate. But at the same time, he carried a lot of baggage on him, too.
He carried a lot of baggage and did not
perform
well for
the Orioles. Same thing Ryan Howard has right now.
Yeah, so you're taking a chance on a guy's pedigree. The Mariners are taking a big chance and picking up Nelson Cruz, thinking that he's going to repeat the season that he had last year for the Orioles, and that may or may not happen. So there's a lot of maybes there. So maybe Manny Machado improves. Good chance of that happening. Maybe Chris Davis improves. Decent chance of that happening. Maybe Christian Walker comes up and becomes a rookie sensation overnight. Maybe Daryl Alvarez becomes a rookie sensation overnight. A lot of maybes there. But
maybe Jonathan Scope's production increases in 2015.
But at the same time, Josh, we're not talking about, is Adam Eaton going to get a starting in this rotation?
Is A.J. Burnett finally going to come to the Orioles?
No.
Oh, no, please.
Who would you rather have, Adam Eaton or Daniel Cabrera? I'd rather be talking about than that.
That is tough.
I'd
rather have Anna Benson pitch than Chris Benson. Is that fair to say?
Chris Benson, yeah.
That's all he was known for.
Was his wife.
Was his hot wife.
Yeah, yeah. So Adam Eaton or Chris Benson in the number five rotation. And you're like, oh, good grief. Can Jake Arrieta reach up to his full potential? Maybe for another team.
Can Alfredo Simon reach his full potential?
Or was it Simone? I can never really get that. Was it Alfredo Simon or Simone? He kind of changed the pronunciation on a daily basis.
I kind of have my own method when it comes to pronouncing players' names correctly, like Felix P.A. I always called him Felix Pie because you have to earn the right for me to pronounce your name correctly.
Yeah, how about that? We could be debating about Felix P.A. or Jay Payton.
There you go. That's a great comparison right there.
Instead, we're talking about, can our core guys improve upon what they've had, and the guys that we lost last year,
Who do you want, Corey Patterson or Adam Jones? I'm taking Adam Jones, yeah.
Well, Corey Patterson for his speed, put him somewhere else there.
I would definitely take Corey Patterson over Nate McLeod, though.
Okay.
And Nolan Reimold.
No, definitely Nolan Reimold.
You've been hearing that talk, Stu.
His name came up this past week, and I'm thinking to myself,
Why?
This is not Jay Payton or Corey Patterson.
This is like Jay Gibbons
Felix P.A. or Jay Gibbons or anything like that. This is not the pre-2012 Baltimore Orioles.
This is like Jay Gibbons and Larry Bigby showing up at FanFest last year.
This is a Baltimore Orioles team that is coming off of an AL East title. Okay, this is something that should be looked upon. And unlike in 1997 when they lost all those guys, they've kept the manager of the year. They've kept the executive of the year. Peter Angelos hasn't imploded the entire management of the Baltimore Orioles. It's still intact. It's just that they are losing a couple of key players, but gaining ones back from injury that did not help them last year getting to an AL East title. But even so, still better than talking about pre-2012 when we were thinking Adam Eaton in the starting rotation? Ugh, I could pitch for the Baltimore Orioles at this point and be successful. Or lack thereof, but still get a paycheck.
Breathe in, breathe out.
Breathe out.
Woosa.
Call me when spring training starts. Pitchers and catchers report.
And you know what is going to be happening in the spring, and one of the best times of the year for all sports is
March Madness.
Which is why, yes, we are delving into Maryland hoops talk.
Well, because the Maryland football talk is dwindling by the wayside till they get to the Farmers Bowl, whatever things called.
Which will be taking place on December 30th, which will be the Foster's Farm Bowl, the 2014 Foster Farm Bowl.
I said it
Bowl.
Was some type of farm bowl.
Yeah. Maryland will be playing Stanford, and it should be an interesting matchup. It'll be interesting to see both of those teams play, both equal record-wise, but let's get to the Maryland men's basketball team, who, as of this podcast, looking at their record, are 10-1 on the year.
It's going to be their record for as long as this podcast is in circulation, because Maryland's got a whole week off. Their next game is going to be on December 21st against Oklahoma State, at Oklahoma State, mind you.
Which will be next Sunday.
That is going to be a tough game as well. It's going to be like the Virginia game, so that's another opponent that you really, really got to play up to. But so far in the out-of-conference schedule, everybody's been taking a shine to Maryland because they are currently ranked and hovering around 20th. They are 19th in the AP poll, and they are 20th in the USA Today coaches poll.
And had they defeated Virginia earlier in the season, they probably would have been ranked near the top 10. But, of course, at this point, you kind of have to get the, with all due respect, lower tier teams out of the way in your schedule before you get up to the big boy schedule, which is the Big Ten Conference, which nobody in the Big Ten Conference has played each other yet. So it's going to be quite interesting to see, because you have three teams in the Big Ten right now, all with 10-1 records.
Yeah.
You have Maryland, that's 19th in the nation at 10-1. Penn State, who is unranked, 10-1. Number 5, Wisconsin, is 10-1. And then, of course, you have number 12, Ohio State, who are 8-1, but have played lesser games than those previous three teams.
Don't shy on the Minnesota Golden Gophers. They are 8-2 right now.
Nope, 8-2. And you always keep an eye out on Michigan State, too, and even Michigan, because those are two respective teams in the Big Ten there.
Tom Izzo, very dangerous name for
Michigan
State.
One of the best
State.
Coaches in the nation right
there. Like to see Mark Turgeon go up against Tom Izzo, and that's going to be on December 30th. And you look at their out-of-conference schedule. They've got two games left in the out-of-conference before they hit Big Ten. They've got Oklahoma State and then Oakland. Then Oakland's going to be at Xfinity Center. Oakland is 4-5, so that's going to be another cream puff team that they can roll over. But Oklahoma State, that's going to be the game to watch, and that is on Sunday, December 21st.
What's Oklahoma State's record?
8-1.
So they're a team with potential to upset the Terps right there.
Oh, man, I wish we were talking about Orioles baseball in progress during the season. I missed the season, okay? When Adam Jones said the season was effing awesome, he was speaking for just about everybody. Because
we'll reflect on that on the year-end show there,
despite the fact that that season ended the way it did against the Kansas City Royals, that was a freaking awesome season.
Well, let's go to Maryland's last game, which was played this past weekend against South Carolina. Carolina Upstate, I believe their name is, 8-3 South Carolina Upstate. Maryland won 67-57. It was at the Comcast Center at College Park, so Maryland, decent win for them. Were pretty solid with the, with the
played
production, a, with the production.
Played
if I have
a pretty
to say
flat
that.
First half, but then
pretty
the second,
flat, yeah. But in the end,
second half, though, they just rolled. They just completely rolled and woke up as a team. And you look at their win against the USC Upstate Spartans.
UPST.
Yeah. Remember when they played Nidget? NGIT?
Oh, yeah. That almost sounds like something you shouldn't say.
No, like a midget?
Little people, right.
Yeah.
Little people.
Well, it's Nidget.
Yeah.
NGIT.
But
they also played against the North Carolina Central Eagles, who are at 6-4. They beat them 67-56. Once again, in the first half, they played pretty well with 39 points, but then kind of quieted down the second half. It was a tale of two halves in that game, but Maryland, one loss so far.
Yeah, one loss so far.
And they've got
so
two games left before they hit play.
Well, let's look at the production from this game. Jake Lehman, let's talk about the year this guy's having. 17 points, which led the team, the junior out of Massachusetts, who's 6'8", 205 pounds, plays the guard forward position, has actually been improving the last several seasons. And it just seems like that ever since Maryland has switched to the Big Ten, and I don't want to say it has to do with the Big Ten Conference, I guess you could call it Big Ten confidence that this team's going through right now, especially with Mello Trimble. Mello Trimble is looking like an All-American right now.
Big Ten swagger, and he's looking like he is what Mike Jones should have been.
He's what Mike Jones should have been. He's what Gilchrist should have been. A lot of guys, you name the guy, DJ Strawberry, he is what all of them should have been. And Mello Trimble has a huge amount of potential. And here's the scary thing. You have Des Wells out with a foot injury. Is likely to come back in the next several weeks. Who knows? But at this point right now, Ray, this Maryland team, this Maryland men's team, has played very decent, has been holding their own. But until they get to the Big Ten matchups, who knows what team we're going to see? Are we going to see the team that is going to start out 12-1? Or are we going to see the team that looked inferior to the Virginia Cavaliers when they played them?
Well, they looked up inferior, but they sure as hell didn't get waxed by them. I mean, it was the first half that they played pretty bad, but then in the second half, you know, they were only down by like they only scored 3 points less in the second half. At the same time, though, that's enough for Virginia to win. But it wasn't a shellacking as we usually see when Maryland hits against a tougher opponent. They actually held in with them.
Yeah, and switching genders here from the men's to the women's team. Of course, a perennial top 25 team, the Maryland Lady Terps are at this point number 14 in the nation, 8-2 on the year, and two of their losses. One you could understand, the other I just don't understand. You had a 92-72 road loss at Notre Dame, number 2 Notre Dame, and you lost at home to unranked Washington State, 70-64. You know, I don't want to criticize Brenda Freeze because she has been very successful at College Park in her entirety as the head coach of the Lady Terps. But this number 14 team, if they are looking to be an Elite Eight, Final Four team, maybe go to the national championship, and yes, even though UConn is a top dog, no pun intended for the Huskies, in women's basketball, you still have to hold out hope that they'll just lose it for one game and open up the possibility to a new champion. But the Maryland Lady Terps, Ray, I think, have a great amount of potential. I mean, they are 10th in the nation in points per game, 82.2. Field goal percentage, 0.494, third in the nation. The only thing they seem to be lacking in competition with the top 25 is rebounds per, which is 37.8, and assists per, which is 16.2.
Yeah, but everybody also looks at the top dog, that is UConn, and that's the team to always beat in women's basketball. What was that one game that you were telling me about pre-show? Where it was 85-24, was it Charleston?
It was a Charleston, I believe, that got that whooping 85-24 by UConn this year. So it was just brutal, just absolutely brutal. But yeah, I mean, other than that though, Ray, the Maryland Lady Terps, the Maryland men's basketball team, just putting on pretty successful years coming into the season. I mean, normally you would see the Maryland men lose about 4 games to the inferior, you know, record teams.
Where sometimes they would get upset by a couple guys.
They would get upset by American.
And then when they get into the ACC schedule, then it becomes really tough and they get waxed by a couple of teams. I don't see that happening this year when they go in the Big Ten. Yeah, how about that, you detractors about the Big Ten? Oh, Maryland's going to get their ass kicked in the Big Ten.
There comes that voice again. Oh, my goodness.
It didn't happen. Didn't happen in football except for against Ohio State, and it might not happen in basketball.
By the way, a Lady Terp to keep your eye on, Shatori Walker-Kimbrough, had 23 points and 10 rebounds in her last game against American. So be sure to look out for her in the next coming months, because I'm sure she'll play a big role in the Terps' successes, hopefully not their failures.
Another Shaderon in the making?
Let's hope so. Let's absolutely hope so. By the way, who was that girl that played for Delaware years ago? Very tall girl. No, I'm not talking about...
not Elena Deladon.
That's who I'm talking about. Yeah. I'll tell you what. If Delaware probably had one more talented player on that team probably would have won that national title, because Deladon was really good. Not Brittany Griner good when Brittany Griner was at Baylor, but no, she was pretty good. Deladon was.
Yeah, that it was. But you know what else is pretty good?
And also pretty mean-spirited.
Oh, yeah. Either mean-spirited or good. It's 2-minute rants.
Oh, my goodness. You know what, Ray? I don't see the point in hesitating and waiting for you to get done, so I'm just going to go ahead and time myself on this as much as possible. Yep, I'm going to time myself right here, starting right about now. There seems to be an epidemic going on in the National Hockey League. No, it's not power play goals coming up at a fast rate. No, it's not referees getting into fights with players. Even though the fights in the NHL are worth watching, especially when the refs just wait for you to drop to the ice in order to stop you. But the one thing that seems to be stopping players is nothing on the ice. If anything, it's off the ice. If anything, it is another epidemic that seems to be hitting America, or in this case, North American ice. Mumps. That's right, mumps. Or as your local scientists would call it, epidemic parotitis. It is a viral disease of the human species which causes, basically the swelling of the salivary glands, also causes loss of voice, it also causes some sore face and or ears symptoms as well. Just a lot of bad things that can happen with the human body if you have the mumps disease. One player that has it, or has caught symptoms of it, is Pittsburgh Penguins all-star Sidney Crosby, as well as several other players in the National Hockey League. Now, how these guys have gotten this disease, well, some people think that it may have to have done with the 2014 Winter Olympics in Sochi. Of course, Sidney Crosby has claimed that he got vaccinated before he took place at the Winter Olympics. I just have to stress this message to people real quick. We are living in the era of epidemics. We have seen it all. SARS, Ebola this year. Now, mumps, folks, it's pretty simple. Take a shower, wash your hands, get your flu shots. For the love of God, stay healthy, stay clean, because we are completely vulnerable.
I've never had a flu shot. By the way, Sidney Crosby's not just having symptoms of full-blown mumps. He has full-blown mumps. It's been confirmed. All right, so one team that plays like they have the mumps is the Washington Redskins. But believe it or not, they are a top 10 defense. I'm going to say this right now. A quote-unquote top 10 defense. The Washington Redskins in total yards per game rank in the top 10 with 334. You're saying to yourself, why are they so bad then? Why are they so bad? Well, the main reason why they are so bad, third down, they're in the top three in terms of third down percentage at like 47%, which is not very good. In terms of creating turnovers, they rank well low on the totem pole. They have 5 interceptions on the year and about 11 fumbles recovered. So it's about 16 turnovers as opposed to how many they have on offense, and they're in the negatives on that. As opposed to also the fact that the offense just hasn't gotten anything going. They have really bad field position to start with, so maybe that's why the yards per game are down, but their touchdowns per game, way up there. They're in first place in touchdowns allowed on defense. Third down, touchdowns, sacks, they're not creating a lot of sacks. They rank right in the middle of the road for terms of sacks, third down percentage. Yards per game is a very, very deceitful statistic for defense. It says to yourself, okay, well, yeah, they allow only this many yards. That's great, right? No. How about the points they give up? How about the sacks they create? The turnovers that they create? What they do on third down? Those are your key parameters in terms of defense. Oh, did I mention penalties? The Redskins are ranked first by a mile. 124 penalties over 1,000 yards. That is not going to get it done in the National Football League for a quote-unquote top 10 defense.
I just wish Jay Gruden and RG3 would go to couples counseling because they truly need it at this point.
That they do, and there's some conspiracies going around here because RG3 actually played pretty good in the first half against the Giants on Sunday, but in the second half just completely crumbled. They were thinking that Jay Gruden was forcing RG3 to become a pocket passer in the second half because in the first half, it looked like vintage RG3, even though that touchdown that got called back at the end of the half that caused Santana Moss to get ejected. Maybe Santana Moss should come back next year because he looks like he's the only Redskin right now who gives a crap about RG3.
You know who I blame for all this Jay Gruden RG3 rift?
Dan Snyder?
Nope, ESPN.
Okay.
Because they asked Jay Gruden and Colt McCoy to hug after Monday Night Football. I think that's where it all started, right?
No means no.
No means no.
I remember the Redskins PR guy denying an ESPN Deportes interview with Colt McCoy after that Dallas Cowboys win. Since that Dallas Cowboys win, the Redskins have lost six straight. So
Yeah. There
you go. That team is a mess. It's a dumpster fire. They're fighting each other in practice. They're fighting referees during the game. The team has lost all control.
RG3 and Gruden haven't went to couples counseling yet.
No, they haven't. RG3 or any coach hasn't went to couples counseling, including Mike Shanahan and Kyle Shanahan. I mean, it was rumored that Mike Shanahan's bags were packed in the Seattle game, but chose to stay when RG3 got hurt. So, very, very dysfunctional organization. They've also got to deal with the media cloud hanging over their head about their name and everything else they're dealing with. It's not fun down on the other side of 95. So, what is fun is our podcast. What are we talking about next week?
Hopefully, Ray, hopefully the Orioles sign somebody or trade for somebody.
How many weeks have we been saying that, though?
We've been saying it a lot, and my voice is getting weak. I'm not going to have any voice left because I'm going to have lost all hope this offseason for any interesting Orioles talk.
I wouldn't say that. Well, for any interesting Orioles talk, yeah, in the offseason, but in terms of the regular season, that's still remained to be seen.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll be talking about... I made the prediction that the Texans win. You'll be talking about maybe the Ravens winning. So
how about we make a deal here?
We'll be talking about a not-so-good offensive matchup.
Yeah, probably. We'll most definitely talk about that. Maybe more good comes out of the Terps, both basketball, men's and women's. Maybe some football news. Who knows?
Terps can beat Oklahoma State. It could happen.
That's going to be a big game this coming Sunday.
It's not to the point where people thought it was, and the Terps actually stand a chance in that game. So we'll be talking about that, maybe talking about hopefully avoiding any more scandals involving Baltimore sports teams.
Hold on, Ray, too. Before we go, I just got a letter from Yeah, we have letters nowadays.
Carrier Pigeon?
Carrier Pigeon. By the way, Mike Tyson Mysteries, great show. No, I got an email from somebody from the network. It says, we are coming in 2015.
What does that mean?
I don't know.
Oh, boy.
That's either good or bad.
We shall see. But until then, this is the Baltimore Sports Free-for-All. I am Ray Atkinson.
I'm Josh Hall.
We will see you all.